So there, as you could see in the earlier slide, there are Unitarians in Ireland, and they're not Unitarian Universalism. Universalism is a uniquely American religion. So when we travel to places like Europe and Australia and New Zealand, there are Unitarian churches, but not Unitarian Universalist churches. And there is a Unitarian church in Dublin and one in Belfast. And so this story is about a couple who were Unitarians, and they had a child, a boy, who was having a lot of trouble in school. I saw this story on the internet. I don't know if it's true or not, but probably not. But anyway, a young child wasn't paying attention in class and wasn't doing the homework and had no motivation and was not doing well at all. And so they decided, although they were Unitarian, to put him in a Catholic school, an Irish Catholic school. So boy came home, and things changed dramatically. He would go right to his room and start working on his math homework in particular. And he was very, his grades improved. He was very intense about getting the work done. And his parents said to their child, "So why? What's the difference? Did the nuns really convince you that that it was very important to do your homework and to do this correctly?" And he said, "No." Well, is it the change in schools? Are they teaching math in a different way, and maybe a different approach to math and a different understanding of math? Is that why you're motivated now and you weren't before?" "No, that's not it." "Well, why do you do so well now and you weren't doing so well before?" He said, "Well, when I got to class the first day, at first I really wasn't interested. It seemed like the same old stuff. And then I noticed this naked man nailed to a plus sign." "And I thought, I better take this seriously." Frank McCarthy lived for many years by himself on his farm in Ireland with his dog. And he and his dog were very close. I know many of you have pets and have dogs, and you know how important the attachment is that you develop with your pet, and you really care deeply about them. And his dog finally died after many years of old age. And so Frank McCarthy went to his Irish Catholic priest and said, I love my dog so much, and he just died, and I wonder if we could have a funeral in the church for my dog." The priest said, "No, we don't do funerals for dogs." Well, the farmer said, "Do you have any suggestions? What can I do?" And the priest said, "Well, you know, you could go down the street to the Unitarian Church. They do all kinds of strange things. Maybe for a small donation, they'll do a funeral for a dog, some kind of financial contribution." The farmer said, "Well, you know, I really don't know very much about this. Do you think 50,000 euros would be enough of a donation?" The priest said, "Why didn't you tell me your dog was Catholic?" $34 million United States residents claim Irish ancestry. There are only about 4 million people living in Ireland. 34 million in the United States claim to be Irish American. As a result, in bars across America this weekend, you can buy green beer. And Irish Americans are holding parades in Boston, New York, and in many other cities. In Chicago, besides a parade, the city will dump green dye in the Chicago River and use the propellers on motorboats to mix it. They plan to continue this tradition this year, although it snowed in Chicago last night, and they're expecting a low of 16 degrees tonight. Now, not to be outdone by Chicago, in Tampa, crews dyed the Hillsborough River green yesterday. A Unitarian may object to a sermon on the Irish before St. Patrick's Day because Patrick was, as I said in the children's story, a Trinitarian Catholic. As I explained in the story, one of the most popular legends about Patrick is that of the shamrock, which has Patrick explaining the idea of the Trinity, three persons in one God, to an unbeliever by showing him a three-leaf plant on one stalk. This story is first recorded in literature about 1726. Patrick lived about the year 400 to 500. One Irish Catholic described the Unitarian view that Jesus was a human being as a debased, simple-minded form of Christianity. So we have justification in just ignoring St. Patrick's Day. Another popular legend is that Patrick chased all the snakes in Ireland into the sea after they attacked him during a 40-day fast that he was undertaking on the top of a hill. An expert in natural history at the National Museum of Ireland in Dublin has searched the Irish fossil collections. He says at no time has there ever been any suggestion of snakes in Ireland. So there was nothing for St. Patrick to banish. Before Patrick, the Irish practiced the Druid religion. Unfortunately, we know very little about the ancient Druids. The Druids themselves left no written records. The oldest Roman account, written about 1900 years ago, describes white-clad Druids who climbed a sacred oak, cut down the mistletoe growing on the oak, sacrificed two white bulls, and then used the mistletoe to cure infertility. I don't know if it worked. But although we have little information today, some pagans say that the legend of Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland into the sea is a symbolic story about Patrick's destruction of the earth-centered Druid religion. So modern pagans also have their doubts about honoring Patrick. But on the other hand, the writer Thomas Cahill makes a strong case that Patrick was a positive force in human history. In 1995, Cahill published his best-selling book, How the Irish Save Civilization. The Irish, Cahill wrote, are part of a larger ethnic group called Celts. About 2,600 years ago, one branch of the Celts settled in present-day France and became the Gauls. A tribe of Celts traveled between France and what is now Spain and became sea traders. At about 350 BC, some of these Celts traveled from what we now call Spain up to Ireland. People were already living on the island when they arrived. These people had built great burial mounds and magnificently carved tombs. The invading Celts stripped before battle. This must have been in the summertime. They took their clothes off, and then they rushed naked towards the local residents, carrying only a sword and a shield, and wearing only sandals and a golden neck ornament. In this way, they took control of the island. In Irish legend, the inhabitants, the Celts killed, the previous inhabitants, became the fairies and the leprechauns who haunt the ancient tombs and the burial mounds of Ireland. Patrick arrived in Ireland about 900 years later in 432 AD to convert the Celts to Christianity. After his successful missionary efforts, Irish Catholics invented the confessional booth. Before the invention of the confessional booth, priests had expected Catholics to confess their sins in public, and forgiveness was limited. According to legend, though, the Celts explain that the Druids had a relationship called a soul friend. A close friend, not an imaginary friend, but a close friend who would keep their secrets. And from this tradition, the Irish introduced the Catholic Church to confessional privacy and unlimited forgiveness. The only unforgivable sin was the sin of a priest who broke the seal of the confessional. Still today, the Irish have a tremendous respect for personal boundaries. They are sensitive to each other's right to privacy, and they do not impose or intrude on one another. According to legend, before Patrick, there was in Ireland a rich oral tradition of storytelling and poetry. The Celts used creative imagination to enhance that cold, gray, rainy days that they found in the wintertime. Every noble Celtic family supported their own poets, and these poets memorized poems and passed them down from one generation to the next. Oral historians, remembering and passing them down. This is before Patrick. Patrick arrived in Ireland and introduced writing so that people could start to write down these stories that were passed down through oral tradition. About the same time that Patrick was introducing the Irish to writing, from 400 to 700 of the Common Era, tribes with names like the Goths or the Huns were moving from the east into Western continental Europe. The Roman Empire was disintegrating. Illiteracy was becoming the norm on the continent. The immigrants moved from east to west on the continent and did not protect or maintain the great Roman libraries. Meanwhile, Patrick, having studied in France, carried to Ireland many of these Latin Roman manuscripts, and he created an island of scholars. Operating on the fringe of Europe, beyond the reach of the invading barbarian tribes from the east, the newly literate Irish monks preserved the written culture of Europe. The monks naturally copied scripture onto their sheepskin, but more than that, they copied other works of literature. The Irish love a good story, and they preserve the great Roman stories. Laboriously, they copied and protected the classical texts that had ceased to exist on the continent of Europe. Starting in 590, Irish missionaries founded a number of monasteries on the European continent in France and Italy. Eventually, these missionaries carried the books that they had created in Ireland to help reestablish literacy on the continent. In this way, they restored the basis of classical civilization. They provided a critical bridge between ancient Rome and medieval Europe. So Thomas Cahill, in his book, How the Irish Saved Civilization, wrote this: "The Hebrew Bible would have been saved without the Irish, transmitted to our time by the scattered community of Jews. The Greek Bible, the Greek commentaries, and much of their literature of ancient Greece were well enough preserved in the East and might still be available to us somewhere. But Latin literature would almost surely have been lost without the Irish. An illiterate Europe would hardly have developed its great national literatures without the example of the Irish. Beyond that, there would have perished in the West not only literacy, but all the habits of mind that encourage thought." So this bridge that the Irish provided enabled civilization based on the Roman classical writings to continue. Perhaps because I've always loved reading, what I find most inspiring about this story is the passionate way that the Irish took to writing. They highly valued words. Poets were the only citizens allowed to move freely around Ireland, and even today, writers are not taxed in Ireland. The Irish protected poetry, even satirical poetry. They tell the story of a group of Christian leaders who were tired of having the poets writing satirical poems and making fun of the Christians. So the leaders, the Christian leaders, proposed a meeting, then argued that the church should suppress the poets. But a majority of the Irish priests defeated this motion. And after the vote, according to the legend, 1,200 happy poets crowded into the meeting, singing the praises of their supporters. Poetry was an essential part of Irish life. Over the centuries, the Irish struggled to maintain their ethnic identity, and it has not been easy. The Vikings invaded, and the Irish finally defeated them after 400 years of occupation. The English invaded and occupied the island until 1922. During this time of English occupation, conservative priests, whom French Catholics had expelled from France because they were so conservative, these priests came to Ireland and began to dominate the theology of the Irish church. The theology of these priests focused on the evil nature of people. The Irish Catholic Church isolated, a closed system, separated from outside influences, and possessing a grim theology, became rigid, authoritarian, and moralistic. Only the church offered institutional protection in the face of English occupation. In a land of extreme poverty, where the English controlled the few natural resources, the priests claimed to hold the key to salvation. When famine hit the island in the 1840s and 1850s, millions immigrated from Ireland to the United States. Through parochial schools, the Catholic Church in America continued to have a pervasive impact on the social and cultural training of Irish children. Basic to the theology of Irish American Catholic churches was an emphasis on the sinfulness of human beings. The Catholic Church taught that humans would suffer deservedly for their sins. As a result, many Irish Americans continue to struggle with a sense of guilt and sin. Reflecting this negative view of human nature, Patrick Moynihan said after President Kennedy's assassination, "I do not think that there is any point being Irish if you do not know that the world is going to break your heart one day." Between 1962 and 1965, the Second Vatican Council created a revolution in the Catholic Church and had a profound impact on Irish Catholics. For the first time, members of the Irish Catholic Church had an option of deciding issues for themselves. And as a result, over the past 50 years, some of this guilt and rigidity that plagued the Irish for so many years has been diminished. Today, the aspect of Irish culture that I love, the storytelling and the writing, it is still alive and strong. The poet continues to be an important member of the Irish society. From Jonathan Swift to Oscar Wilde to contemporary writers like Anne Enright, Irish writers continue to publish bestsellers. One Irish novelist has described the Irish as struggling through century after century, seeking a synthesis between dream and reality, with a shrewd knowledge of the world and a strange reluctance to cope with it. Monica McGregrick, an Irish psychologist, speculated on where this love of dreams came from. She writes, "For hundreds of years, the Irish lived an impoverished life on a misty island, which had very few natural resources and was dominated by a foreign oppressor. Their ability to weave dreams was crucial to their survival. Historically, they have valued fantasy and dreaming more, perhaps, than any other Western culture." This culture produced Frank McCord, who wrote in Angela's Ashes, "Above all, we were wet. Out in the Atlantic Ocean, great sheets of rain gathered to drift slowly up the River Shannon and settle forever in Limerick. From October to April, The walls of Limerick glistened with the damp. In pubs, steam rose from damp bodies and garments to be inhaled with cigarette and pipe smoke laced with stale fumes of spilled stout and whiskey. The rain drove us into church, our refuge, our strength, our only dry place. We huddled in great damp clumps, dozing through priest drone, while steam rose again from our clothes to mingle with the sweetness of incense, flowers, and candles. Limerick gained a reputation for piety, but we knew it was only the rain. James Joyce, Dubliners. Snow was general all over Ireland. It was falling on every part of the dark central plain, on the treeless hills, falling softly upon Bog Allen, and farther west, softly falling into the dark, mutinous Shannon waves. It was falling, too, upon every part of the lovely churchyard on the hill where Michael Furey lay buried. It lay thickly, drifting on the crooked crosses and headstones, on the spears of the little gate, on the barren thorns. His soul swooned slowly as he heard the snow falling faintly through the universe and faintly falling. And this Irish culture has also produced a few jokes. Humor is a great tool of the Irish in coping with life's problems. Humor offers a way to discuss sensitive topics, and it allows the sharing of information. An Irish priest and a Unitarian minister were in a car accident. They collided on the street, and it was a pretty bad accident. The Unitarian minister stumbled out of his car, and the Irish priest went over to him and said, "How are you? Are you okay? Can I help?" And he says, "Well, I'm pretty shook up." And the priest said, "Well, here, I've got this flask of whiskey. Take a drink." So the Unitarian minister grabbed the flask and drank the whiskey down. "So that, I feel much better. Thank you. So what are we going to tell the police?" "Well," says the priest, "I don't know what you're going to tell him, but I'm going to tell him I wasn't the one drinking." On the eve of St. Patrick's Day, I give thanks to the Irish. I give thanks not for their whiskey, but for their words. The Irish enshrined poetry and stories as their central religious act. In doing so, they have shown the beauty of the human spirit.